All right. So good to see everybody. We got 10 people so far. All right. We are going to chant Jai Radha Madhava. Okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhauri. Gopi Janavallabha Girivaran Ahudi. Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Manachari. Yamuna Tira Manachari. Jaya Ranhu Madhuva Kunya Bihari. Jaya Ranhu Madhuva Kunya Bihari. Gopi Janabalap Ma Giribara Dhauri. Gopi Jana Malabha Giribadan Pauti. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Manachari. Jaya Ranhu Madhava Kunya Bihari. Jaya Ranhu Madhava Kunya Bihari. Jai Om Vishnupad. Paramahansa Paravidakacharya, all the tethers of the Shri Srimad, His Divine Grace of Ayachalana, the Bhaktivedanta, Goswami Maharishila Prabhupada, Jai Iskan Boundaracharya, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Anandakoti Vaishnava, Vrindi Kijai, Namacharya, Srila Harilas Thakur Kijai, Brem, Say, Gaho, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Shibhaya Garaha Shiva Sibigo Bhaktivinayakacharya Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shyam Kund Radha Kanda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai Jagadagaswami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shimani Lassi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindavanayakacharya Gopinanda Hari Hari Hari. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Budle, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamit Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani, Nivashesha Sanyavadi, Paschacha Deja. RNA. So Omagana Timidanda Shaganan Jana Shlakya Chakshuru Meditan Yena Tasbai Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful base. Of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, so we're going to continue with our study of the Bhagavad Gita. I'm just thinking we're going to get to the nectar devotion pretty soon because we're on the last chapter, the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So we're going to be finishing Bhagavad Gita pretty soon. Of course, the 18th chapter is quite a large chapter. So let us start. Chapter 18, conclusion, the perfection of renunciation. Okay, just one second. So, chapter 18, the conclusion, the perfection of renunciation, Krishna explains the meaning of renunciation and the effects of the modes of nature on human consciousness and activity. He explains Brahman realization, the glories of the Bhagavad Gita, and the ultimate conclusion of the Gita. The highest path of religion is absolute, unconditional, loving surrender unto Lord Krishna, which frees one from all sins, brings one to complete enlightenment, and enables one to return to Krishna's eternal spiritual abode. Wow. So, let's start. Arjuna vacha sanyasasya mahabahu tatvam ichami veditum jagasya cha rishikesha utagkeshini shudana. Arjuna vacha, Arjuna said, sanyasasya. Renunciation, Mahabaho, Almighty Arm One, Tatvam, the truth, Ichami, I wish, Veditum, to understand, Chagasha, of renunciation, Cha, also, Rishikesha, master of the senses, Pratak, differently, Keshi, Nishudana, of killing the Keshi demon. Almighty Armed One, Arjuna said, I wish to understand the purpose of renunciation, Chaga, and of the renounced order of life, Sannyas. O killer of the Keshi demon, master of the senses. Purport. Actually, the Bhagavad Gita is finished in 17 chapters. The 18th chapter is a supplementary summarization of the topics discussed before. In every chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna stresses that devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. This same point is summarized in the 18th chapter as the most confidential path of knowledge. In the first six chapters, stress was given to devotional service. Yoginam api sarvesham. That's the last verse in the sixth chapter. Of all yogis or transcendentalists, one who always thinks of me within himself is best. In the next six chapters, pure devotional service and its nature and activity were discussed. In the third six chapters, knowledge, renunciation, the activities of material nature and transcendental nature and devotional service were described. It was concluded that all acts should be performed in conjunction with the Supreme Lord, represented by the words Om Ta Sat, which indicate Vishnu, the Supreme Person. The third part of Bhagavad Gita has shown that devotional service and nothing else is the ultimate purpose of life. This has been established by citing past acharyas and the Brahma Sutra, Vedanta Sutra. Certain impersonalists consider themselves to have a monopoly on the knowledge of Vedanta Sutra, but actually, the Vedanta Sutra is meant for understanding devotional service. For the Lord himself is the composer of the Vedanta Sutra, and he is its knower. That is described in the 15th chapter. In every scripture, every Veda, devotional service is the objective. That is explained in Bhagavad Gita. And the reason we know that, for the Brahma Sutra, for example, or the Vedanta Sutra, is that the commentary of the Vedanta Sutra is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Vaishnava Acharyas, such as Shripad Ramanujacharya and others, have written their commentaries pointing out how devotional service is the objective of the Vedanta Sutra. That is explained in Bhagavad Gita. As in the second chapter, a synopsis of the whole subject matter was described in the 18th chapter. Also, the summary of all instruction is given. The purpose of life is indicated to be renunciation and attainment of the transcendental position above the three material modes of nature. Arjuna wants to clarify the two distinct subject matters of Bhagavad Gita, namely, tyaga and the renounced order of life, sannyasa. Thus, he is asking the meaning of these two words. Two words used in this verse to address the Supreme Lord, Rishikesha, and Keshi Nishudana are significant. Rishikesha is Krishna, that means the master of all senses, who can always help us attain mental serenity. Arjuna requests him to summarize everything in such a way that he can remain equal poised. Yet he has some doubts, and doubts are always compared to demons. He therefore addresses Krishna as Keshi Nishudana. Keshi was the most formidable demon who was killed by the Lord. Now Arjuna is expecting Krishna to kill the demon of doubt. So, of course, this Keshi demon was a horse demon, and Krishna simply stuck his fist into the Keshi demon's throat and killed the Keshi demon. So, text 2. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Kamyanam Karmanam Nyasam Sanyasam Kavayo Vidapu Sarva Karma Pala Chagam Rahus Chagam Vichakshanaha. Sri Bhagavan Vacha, the Supreme Personality of God, had said, Kamyanam, with desire, Karmanam, of activities, Nyasam, renunciation, Sanyasam, the rehouse order of life, Kavya, the learned, Vidahu, no, Sarva, of all karma activities, Pala, of results, Tyagam, renunciation, Prahu, call, Tyagam, renunciation, Vichakshanaha, the experience. The Supreme Personality of God had said the giving up of activities that are based on material desire is what great learned men call the renounced order of life, sannyas. And giving up the results of all activities is what the wise call renunciation. So in other words, a sannyasi is in the order of life, it's one of the ashrams, and it means two things, san and yas, to accept and reject, just like you see here in the report, in the word-by-word synonyms, yasa, renunciation, and sannyasam, the renounced order of life. So yasa means to give up, and san means to accept. And as we mentioned many times before, the word sannyas means someone who is in the order of life that accepts everything favorable for serving Krishna and rejects everything unfavorable. And so Krishna is defining that term. And tyaga simply means give up, to give up the results of activities. Performance of activities for results has to be given up. This is the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. Of course, one can tyaga, one can give up the results of activities, even if one is not a sannyas. How do you give up the results of activities? You give results to Krishna. But activities leading to advanced spiritual knowledge are not to be given up. This will be made clear in the next verses. In the Vedic literature, there are many prescriptions and methods for performing sacrifice for some particular purpose. There are certain sacrifices to perform to attain a good son or to attain elevation to the higher planets. But sacrifices prompted by desires should be stopped. Remember that sacrifice is the mode of passion. However, sacrifice for the purification of one's heart or for the advancement in spiritual science should not be given up. Text 3. Chajam dosha vadi jete karma prahur manishinaha yajadana tabha karma chajamiti chapare. Chajam must be given up, doshavat as an evil, ti thus, aka one group, karma, work, Rahu, they say, Manishinaha, great thinkers, Yajna, of sacrifice, Dana, charity, Tapa, penance, Karma, works, Na, never, Tajam, are to be given up, Iti, Das, Cha, and Apare, others. Some learned men declare that all kinds of fruit of activities should be given up, as faulty. Yet other sages maintain that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance should never be abandoned. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, if someone is pure devotee, one gives up all kinds of fruit of activities, but they still continue to perform acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance when they're connected and pleasing to Krishna. There are instances in the Vedic literature which are subjects of contention. For instance, it is said that an animal can be killed in a sacrifice, yet some maintain that animal killing is completely abominable. Although animal killing and sacrifice is recommended in the Vedic literature, the animal is not considered to be killed. I'll have to explain all this. The sacrifice is to give a new life to the animal. Sometimes the animal is given a new animal life after being killed in the sacrifice, and sometimes the animal is promoted immediately to the human form of life. But there are different opinions among the sages. Some say that animal killing should always be avoided, and others say that for a specific sacrifice. All these different opinions on sacrificial activity are now being clarified by the Lord himself. So, activities such as animal killing and sacrifice are recommended in certain Vedic literatures, but they are not recommended for this age of Kali. There's certain things that are prohibited in this age of Kali, one of which is Ashwamedha and Gomedha. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Ashwamedha is a horse sacrifice and Gomedha is a cow sacrifice. It's prohibited in this Kali Yuga precisely for the reason that the brahmanas are not able to rejuvenate the animal and give it a higher form of life or a human form of life. It was quite a mystical procedure in the previous yuga when the animal would enter in the fire and then come out in a new body. Nobody can do that now. For example, in the previous yuga, the story in the Mahabharata, where King Drupada wanted to have a son. And so what happened? He asked the brahmanas to perform a sacrifice. Now, it didn't turn out exactly the way he wanted it to turn out. What happened? He said, brahmanas, yaja, upayaja, I believe were the brahmanas' names, perform this sacrifice. And they were performing the sacrifice, and they said to King Drupada, now is the time. Your wife should come, because she's supposed to give birth to the son that you want, that can kill Dronacharya. Anyway, that was his ulterior motive. So the wife didn't come on time. Pretty normal. And so the brahmana said, all right, we will create the son without the wife. And so, boom, out of the fire came Dhrishtadyumna. And then also out of the fire came Draupadi, who was married to the Pandavas, but that's a different story. So in the previous ages, the point I'm making, in the previous ages, the brahmanas were so expert in chanting mantras, they could create people out of the mantras, out of the fire sacrifice. And not that they actually created a soul. The soul is already there, but they created a body for a particular soul to inhabit. They could rejuvenate animals. They could create demons from a fire sacrifice. They could do so many things. And right now, the Brahmins can't do any of those things. It's prohibited in Kali Yuga, Ashwamedha, and Gomedha. And one other thing that's interesting, that's prohibited in Kali Yuga, is the taking of sannyas. Now, why is that? It's in the Varnashram system. Brahmacharis, grahasthas, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Well, the reason is that manda sumanda matiyo manda bhagya adhuta. People in Kali Yuga are so like degraded that if they're given a particular position, they will take advantage of that position and use that position to exploit others. And so we find power corrupts. That's why you cannot really institute varnashram in its entirety in Kali Yuga. You'd end up in a disaster. So power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And there were a few instances of absolute power in the hands of the king before, like King Vena, and he had to be dethroned by the Brahmins. But that was a different age. So, therefore, you don't have sannyas. But, so you may say, you know, why are you walking around as a sannyasi? Well, for the purposes of preaching, then that adjustment could be made. Utility is the principle. But for the purpose of going back to Godhead or becoming Krishna conscious, changing one's ashram does not make a difference. It doesn't. It really doesn't. That's why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Kurma Brahmin in South India, when this Brahmin wanted to reject his family and take sannyas, Lord Chaitanya, repeating Lord Brahma's statement in the Srimad Bhagavatam, said, Stani stita shudikatam tanvan van ubir. Just stay where you are and chant Hare Krishna. You know, hear and chant about Krishna. So really, that's the point. Whatever ashram you're in, whether you're married or single or bachelor, whatever ashram you're in, you just absorb yourself in Krishna Katha, and that will enable you to reach the perfection in life. And in fact, that's why we mentioned before that the preferable stage of renunciation in Kali Yuga is called Kshetra Sannyas. Anyway, that's a different subject matter than we're talking about here. But really, what's mentioned in this particular purport is that animal sacrifice is prohibited. And we see, let's talk about the Bible, for example, or the time of Lord Jesus. They were doing animal sacrifices in the temple in Jerusalem and sacrificing these poor lambs. Just like in India, they sacrificed goats. And so what happened, in the name of sacrifice, you had a whole bunch of people making money from it, selling lambs. What else they do? Changing money. And we find in the Bible that Jesus Christ became so angry with them, he overturned the money changers' tables and tried to stop this abomination. So in certain circumstances, yes, there may be this animal sacrifice, but not now. It's in a different day and age. Therefore, you need spiritual guidance from a spiritual master to tell you what is appropriate and what is not appropriate in terms of renunciation, charity, penances, and austerities. So, next verse. Nischyam shrinu me tatra jaji bharata satama jagohi purusha vyatra kiyatita. Nischyam. Certainly, shrinu, here, me, from me, tatra, therein. Chage, in the matter of renunciation. Bharata satama, O best of the Bharatas. Chagaha, renunciation. He certainly. Purusha vyagra, O tiger among human beings. Trivida of three kinds, Sam Prakirtha is declared. O best amongst the Bharatas, now hear my judgment about renunciation. O tiger among men, renunciation is declared in the scriptures to be of three kinds. Now remember, we've been talking about three different kinds of things. No, you don't remember? Like austerity. Anyway, we're talking about the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. So there's three different varieties of renunciation, depending on the mode of nature of a particular individual. Purport, although there are differences of opinion about renunciation, here the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, gives his judgment, which should be taken as final. After all, the Vedas are different laws given by the Lord. Here the Lord is personally present, and his word should be taken as final. The Lord says that the process of renunciation should be considered in terms of the modes of material nature in which they are performed. Pretty simple. Text 5. Yajna dana tapa karma vacharjam karyame patat yajyo danam tapaschaiva avanani manishinam. Yajna, sacrifice, dana, charity, tapaha, and penance, karma activity, na, never, chajam, to be given up, karyam, must be done, eva, certainly, tat, that. Yajnaha, sacrifice, dhanam, charity, tapaha, penance, cha, also. Eva, certainly, havanani, purifying, manishinam, even for the great souls. Acts of charity, or sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. And that was the point. You're not supposed to renounce these things, but do them for Krishna. The yogi should perform acts for the advancement of human society. There are many purificatory processes for advancing a human being to spiritual life. The marriage ceremony, for example, is considered to be one of these sacrifices. It is called Vivaha Yajna. Should a sannyasi who is in the renounced order of life and who's given up his family relations encourage the marriage ceremony? The Lord says here that any sacrifice which is meant for human welfare should never be given up. Vivaha Yajna, the marriage ceremony, is meant to regulate the human mind so that it may become peaceful for spiritual advancement. For most men, this Vivaha Yajna should be encouraged even by persons in the renounced order of life. Sannyasi should never associate with women, but that does not mean that one who is in the lower stage of life, a young man, should not accept a wife in the marriage ceremony. All prescribed sacrifices are meant for achieving the Supreme Lord. So in other words, someone who is a sannyasi is generally taken, we just got finished saying this prohibitive, but anyway, a sannyasi is generally taken as the guru of all the other social orders. That's right. The guru of all the social orders, even the guru of the brahmanas, and of all the ashrams too, of varna and ashram. So what the sannyasi does in terms of his renunciation, as we mentioned before, he accepts what's favorable, rejects what's unfavorable for himself, but also for others. So he applies that principle of sannyas in guiding others. In other words, if he sees someone who will be better suited to be in the grahastha order of life, then he will recommend that that person get married. Even in the beginning of the movement, Prabhupada actually arranged marriages between different devotees. Sometimes the sannyasi may suggest it. That's practical. He just sees, what do we mean by better situated? Does it mean that, wow, he can't control his senses, and now all hell will break loose? No, that's not what it means. Better situated means that he will be more stable and steady over the years. Because when we're talking about bringing people to Krishna consciousness, it's not just for the next year or two that we're worried. We're worried about their whole life. And so that means that they need to be steady, even if things go a little slower. But we don't want flaming meteors or flaming stars or whatever it is. We want people who can progress gradually on the path of Krishna consciousness year after year. And that's really important. And that's what is the best thing for each and every individual. To be stable and steady and predictable. Because we've seen so many times where devotees have encouraged people to renounce or be more renounced than they're actually capable of being long-term. I meant long-term, not short-term. I mean, short-term, almost anybody can be renounced short-term. If you put people in the right situation, you know, rah, 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 sis, boom, bah, you know, and you rev up the talks to everybody. Every morning you're having a brahmachari talk. Yes, you have to stay brahmachari. Getting married is maya. It's a burden. Then, of course, for some time you can keep people revved up in the mode of passion to avoid getting married. And unfortunately, that may be, and probably not, is not, in the best interest of the person. Why is that? Because we've seen many cases, people are revved up to be single, and then they hit the ripe old age of 35 or 40, and then they get married. And the problem with that is they don't have a way to make a living that's good. They may be able to make a living by cleaning houses or something like that. That's one problem. Another problem is that they're taking care of their children until they're 65 or 70. And that's really a jamil type of stuff. There's a time in life for everything. You know, the time in life for taking care of children, you know, 20 to 40. And after that, it's like gradually wind down. So these are, even if one remains with the family, one should be winding down. and concentrating more on hearing and chanting. So there's a time in life for everything. So when guiding people, we sannyasis, or whoever happens to be a leader in Krishna consciousness, should consider not just what the person will be able to do for 5 years, how many books they can distribute, how much money they can collect over the next 5 years, but what are they going to be doing 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and even 50 years from now. So the success is when someone can remain in Krishna consciousness following the practices for his or her whole life. You know, it's easy for a young person to be enthusiastic, but for an old person, or not even old, you know, because I'm really old, but for a person who's gets up there in age, after 40, you need to have a stable situation where your needs are met, okay? And we haven't done that all in all cases for devotees in our movement. And I'm sort of predicting that there'll be some difficult situations for a lot of the people, let's say, in India and other places like that, brahmacharis, who have this expectation that they'll be taken care of for their whole lives, that they'll be stable, they'll be happy, they'll have a social, backup for their whole lives, and they may not. So we have to consider what's best. So I definitely consider like that when I'm guiding people. And I don't think just of the short term. So therefore, in the lower stages, and we shouldn't think a lower stage means something bad. You know, sometimes we think higher stages, lower stages. How can you say that I'm in the lower stages? Lower stages means just basically you got to be practical. Therefore, in the lower stages, they should not be given up. People need safety nets. Similarly, charity for the purification is for the purification of the heart. If charity is given to suitable persons, as described previously, it leads one to advanced spiritual life. So who is a suitable person to give charity to? Of course, devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are suitable persons to give charity to. But you may give charity to someone and they'll use it for not a devotee person. They'll use it for intoxication, meeting, and gambling. I remember one time when I was real young before I came to the Krishna Conscious Movement, I was in the subways in New York, and one person who had no home approached me and said, "Buddy, can I have some money for a cup of coffee?" Yes, sir. I felt sentimental, so I gave him some money. Hard as that is to believe that I got sentimental, I gave him some money. I gave him a quarter or something. And then the police came up to me and said, "Don't you understand? He's going to take this drink." I said, "I didn't know that." I was sort of like innocent, naive. I was brought up in a very sheltered situation. So we have to give charity to someone who's going to use it properly. Okay. Next verse. Itanyapi tu karmani sangam chakva palani cha partavyaniti me parta nishitam matam uttamam. Etani, all these, api, certainly, tu bat, karmani, activities. Sangam, association, chakwa, renouncing, palani, results. Cha, also. Part of yani, should be done as duty, iti das, may my. Part of son of Prita, nishchitam, definite, matam, opinion, uttamam, the best. All these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty. And duty means we're doing it voluntarily with love in this particular case. So, O son of Prita, that is my final opinion. Of course, that's motive goodness. Purport. Although all sacrifices are purifying, one should not expect any result by such performances. In other words, all sacrifices which are meant for material advancement in life should be given up, but sacrifices that purify. So, let me explain this. Is that although all sacrifices are purifying, one should not expect any result. That means any fruitive result, but you can expect purification. In other words, all sacrifices which are meant for material advancement in life should be given up. But sacrifices that purify one's existence and elevate one to the spiritual plane should not be stopped. Everything that leads to Krishna consciousness must be encouraged. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Also, it is said that any activity which leads to devotional service to the Lord should be accepted. That is the highest criterion of religion. A devotee of the Lord should accept any kind of work, sacrifice, or charity which will help him in the discharge of devotional service to the Lord. Let's see that again. Should accept any kind of work, sacrifice, or charity which will help him in the discharge of devotional service to the Lord. So whatever the Lord wants, that is surrender. Niya tasya tu sanyasa karmano napapadyate mohatasya paritya das tamasa paripirtitaha. Niyatasya prescribed to but sanyasaha, renunciation, karmanaha of activities. Na never upapadyate is deserved mohat by illusion tasya of them. Paritya renunciation, tamasaha in the mode of ignorance. Parikirtitaha is declared. Prescribed duties should never be renounced. If one gives up his prescribed duties because of illusion, such renunciation is said to be in the mode of ignorance. You know, like in Krishna consciousness, we have prescribed duties, like, for example, chanting, things like that. And if we just give them up because, you know, we don't feel like it, that's in the mode of ignorance. Purport. Work for material satisfaction must be given up with activities which promote one to spiritual activity, like cooking for the Supreme Lord and offering the food to the Lord and then accepting the food recommended. In other words, if one says, this is too difficult, I don't want to start cooking for the Lord. I don't want to offer to the Lord. I just want to go to the supermarket and buy some pre-prepared food and just chant Om Tat Sat to it. People get lazy. I've even seen devotees sometimes. They'll go into McDonald's and order fries. Yuck. Who knows how they're cooked? Or they'll go into a Subway shop. I don't know if you know what a Subway shop is. They have these big sandwiches. And they'll order some vegetarian thing. So the prescribed duty is to offer everything to Krishna. That's our prescribed duty. Not to leave our devotional service just because we feel like it. That's a mode of ignorance. So if you ask someone, you know, why did you do that? I felt like it. Just like we recently had a particular individual who had hepatitis. And he got hepatitis by eating in one of these restaurants. And even one time, we had some devotees were all ordering pizza at night from a pizza place, and somehow or other, the delivery mistook the house of the person and came to my house to deliver it. And believe me, it wasn't me who ordered it. It is said, so that's why you do it, because I feel like it. I need it. That's ignorance, complete ignorance. It is said that a person in the renounced order of life should not cook for himself. Cooking for oneself is prohibited, but cooking for the Supreme Lord is not prohibited. So in other words, I am cooking for Krishna when I cook for myself. Because it keeps me alive. And also, I have my deities. I could engage someone in cooking for me. Prabhupada actually cooked for himself, too, before he came to America. And even after he came to America, he cooked for himself. But as soon as he had disciples who were expert in cooking, like Shrutakirti, then he engaged them. Similarly, a sannyasi may perform a marriage ceremony to help his disciple in advancement of Krishna consciousness. If one renounces such activities, it is to be understood that he's acting in the mode of darkness. So we're not supposed to renounce any of these things, but perform them properly to please Krishna under the direction of Krishna's devotee. So, next text. Dukam ityeva yat karma kaya klesha vayachajit. Sakritva rajasam jajam naiva chaga palam labet. Dukam, unhappy, ti thus, veva certainly, yat which, karma work, kaya for the body, klesha trouble, vayat out of fear, chajet, gives up, sahahi, kritva, after doing rajasam in the mode of passion, chagam, renunciation, na, not, eva certainly, chaga, of renunciation, palam, the results, labet, gains. Anyone who gives up prescribed duties as troublesome or out of fear of bodily discomfort is said to have renounced in the mode of passion. Such action never leads to the elevation of renunciation. Pretty easy to understand. But it's so difficult. The chant 16 rounds. Oh my God. You know, it's a combination of passion and ignorance. Too much trouble to do that. Too much trouble to wake up. Too much trouble to just eat prasadam. Too much trouble to be a vegetarian. Too much trouble. Anyway, and a sannyasi sometimes, out of fear of bodily discomfort, will refuse to travel or to carry out his particular activities. So, sannyasi has to be avaya sapva samshadi jnana yoga vasati, freedom from fear, and also cultivating spiritual knowledge. And at the same time, ready to experience any sort of bodily discomfort, as Srila Prabhupada did in coming to the West. Such action never leads to the elevation of renunciation. One who is in Krishna consciousness should not give up earning money out of fear that he is performing fruitive activities. If by working, one can engage his money in Krishna consciousness, or if by rising early in the morning, one can advance his transcendental Krishna consciousness, one should not desist out of fear, because such activities are considered troublesome. You know, sometimes you find devotees say, I'm not going to get a job and work for a karmis. First of all, we should not consider people to be karmis. We should consider people to be prospective devotees. And then you're giving the results up to Krishna. It's not maya, but we may give it up because it's simply troublesome or we're afraid of something. Such renunciation is the mode of passion. The result of passionate work is always miserable. If a person renounces work in that spirit, he never gets the result of renunciation. Very interesting. Next verse. Karyamicheva yat karma niyatam kriyate arjuna sangam taktva palam chaiva sachaga satviko mataha. A karyam, it must be done itidas eva certainly. Yat, which karma work, niyatam, prescribed, kriyate, is performed, Arjuna, or Arjuna, sangam, association, chakra, giving up, palam, the result, cha, also, eva, certainly, saha, that, chaga, renunciation, satvikaha, the mode of goodness, mataha, in my opinion. Oh, Arjuna, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done, and renounces all material association, all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. And this is, of course, a little preliminary to devotional service. In the mode of goodness, one does his prescribed duty, and he takes pleasure in, we've used this expression many times, doing the right thing. Yes, I've done the right thing. I've done the right thing. And there's a little pride, which is a mixture of passion in doing the right thing. So that's the mode of goodness. Prescribed duties must be performed with this mentality. Of course, the mode of goodness enables one to jump to Krishna consciousness very, very easily. One should act without attachment for the result. He should be disassociated from the modes of work. He's not a factory worker. You know, so we have to be really careful about this misconception that many people have of varnashram. That if someone works in a factory and he's taking a salary, he's a shudra. It's not like that. He may be a Brahmin, but he's doing something that's necessary in Krishna consciousness to maintain his family. In the name of being a Brahmin, many people have left their family or family members destitute, which is not doing their duty. Or just like when Prabhupada, when Prabhupada started this movement, let's take San Francisco, for example, the devotees were not able to collect donations so well. That's understandable. There was hardly anyone there from India. The devotees hadn't learned the tricks of the trade of Sankirtan at that particular point. And so Prabhupada had the devotees go out and get jobs. Now, according to Varnashram, that may be Shudra. But a devotee is not under the jurisdiction of Varnashram. Now, naturally, a devotee will do what is his psychophysical nature long term. But short term, in so many circumstances, it may be necessary just to roll up your sleeves and do what is needful for Krishna. And that's how the San Francisco temple was maintained. And if we want to push forward Krishna consciousness, we have to be ready to do that for Krishna. Not that we could just stick to our so-called varna and say, this is my varna, he ain't going to do anything else. That is a misunderstanding of Varnashram. And someone may say, well, that was the past, but the Krishna consciousness movement is still very small. When we become such a big movement that we're prominent, and many people know us and we have so many professionals in different areas, then there can be a little bit more specialization in people's duties. A little bit more specialization. But right now, one has to be ready, as Prabhupada did. He was cooking, he was cleaning in the beginning, he was counseling, he was doing everything, going to the bank, encouraged sannyasis to get money, to build the temples, so many things. And even today, you know, in India, to build these temples, sometimes the sannyasis are opening up temples, have to really do fundraising. Is that a sannyasi's normal dharma? No. But to preach Krishna consciousness, to bring people to Krishna consciousness, we have to be ready to shed gallons of blood, as Prabhupada said in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. Not that we only shed gallons of blood when it fits our particular nature. Okay. Enough of that. Madvaishya kushalam karma kushale nanusajyate chalga sattva samma vishto medavichina sangseha na, never. Dvaishti, hates. Akushalam, inauspicious, karma, work. Kushale, in the auspicious, na, noah. Anusajyate, becomes attached, chagi, the renouncer, sattva, and goodness, samma vishtaha, absorbed. Medhavi, intelligent, china, having cut off, samseha, all doubts. The intelligent renouncer, situated in the mode of goodness, neither hateful of inauspicious work nor attached to auspicious work, has any doubts about work. In other words, certain work, you may not consider it so auspicious, like cleaning the bathroom. But as for Krishna, ultimately it's all auspicious. But from a material perspective, certain things are auspicious, certain things are not auspicious. But from a spiritual perspective, everything done for Krishna, under Krishna's direction, and in the direction of Krishna's pure devotee is auspicious. A person in Krishna consciousness or in the mode of goodness does not hate anyone or anything which troubles his body. He does work in the proper place in the proper time without fearing the troublesome effects of his duty. Such a person, situated in transcendence, should be understood to be most intelligent and beyond all doubts in his activities. Very nice. Next verse. Nahi deva vita sakyam taptum karma nisheshataha yastu karma pala tyagi satyagityavidhiyate na, never. He, certainly, deva vita, by the embodied sakyam, is possible, taptum, to be renounced, karmani, activities, nisheshataha, altogether, ya, anyone who, to, but, karma of work, pala of the result, chagi, the renouncer, sahahi, chagi, the renouncer, iti thus, abhidhiyate, is said. It is indeed impossible for an embodied being to give up all activities, but he who renounces the fruits of action is called one who is truly renounced. You can't give up all activities. You're breathing. Breathing, you're eating. It's impossible. Unless you die. And then you're not an embodied being, you're a disembodied being. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that one can never give up work at any time. Therefore, he who works for Krishna and does not enjoy the fruit of the results, who offers everything to Krishna, is actually a renouncer. There are many members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness who work very hard in their office or in the factory or some other place, and whatever they earn, they give to the society. Such highly elevated souls are actually sannyasis and situated in the renounced order of life. It is clearly outlined here how to renounce the fruits of work and for what purpose fruits, I'm just going to copy this for someone else, what purpose fruits should be renounced. Wow. So in essence, I mean, even if their social order is not a sannyasi, or ashram is not as a sannyasi or as a brahmin, still they're considered essentially sannyasis because they're accepting everything favorable for serving Krishna and rejecting everything unfavorable. Very important part of the purport there. Okay, I think we will end here. So we will stop sharing the screen and take questions. Hold on a second. Take you off of mute. Okay, who has a question in this regard? I do not see anybody. I mean, I see people. I do not hear anybody. Questions? Oh my God. Everybody's silent today. Where's Nalini Kant? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Hare Krishna, maybe Maharaj, I can ask a question.
Good to see you.
Can you hear me? Okay?
I can hear you.
Dandavat Pranam, please accept my respectful obeisances. So just in relation to Maharaj, the work that we do and we offer the results of that to Krishna, and the example around the factory worker, what about the nature of the work? Because sometimes when we are working, it even could be in companies like, I think you mentioned IBM, for example, yesterday, but the work of the institute itself can be potentially harmful to, you know, to what we're trying to achieve. How about that?
That is an interesting question that's been asked actually quite a few more times. If you think about it, almost any job, I'm saying almost any job that one works, will have some negative component to it. For example, in our temple in New Orleans, this is actually interesting. It's interesting also because of my comments about people getting married at an early age. We have a lot of devotees in New Orleans who attended Gurukul and were encouraged to remain brahmacharis, and they got married. And the only way they could make a living, because they were never trained practically in this world, they went to a Gurukula, which didn't train them how to be practical citizens of the world. It actually trained them how to do fire sacrifices, which is not such a good way to make a living. Unless you can actually, if you're so expert, you can do a fire sacrifice and money can come out of the fire sacrifice, but none of them are so expert like that. So therefore, we have approximately 80 to 100 taxi drivers who are in the congregation in New Orleans. It's quite interesting. And 99% of them are from Bengal. They're from Bengal. And 99% of them came to the United States as pujaris under religious workers. Actually, this shows how if you don't guide someone properly in the early stage, then basically later on they'll be left to fend for themselves as far as making money and supporting the family. And they're all nice devotees. I mean, I love them. I love them. They're all nice devotees. They're my friends. This is not meant as a criticism of anybody. So they're driving taxis. So when you're driving a taxi, you naturally have to transport people that are drinking, transporting liquor, people who are carrying meat with them, people who are taking the prostitute out to the whatever they're going. You can't get away with it. I have to be honest, before I joined the movement, before I surrendered to Srila Prabhupada, When I finished with the university, I didn't know what to do with my life, so I drove a taxi. So I know what driving a taxi is. That's also where I first came in contact with Krishna consciousness, because one of the other taxi drivers gave me a Krishna book. So it wasn't a bad thing. So anyway, so I know that driving a taxi, you have to do all these things that contribute to sinful activities. There's one example. But I think, let's say you work as a pharmacist, or you call it a druggist. That's interesting. Like Prabhupada, this is a funny story. One time a new devotee in the movement, many years ago, had to go to prison because he actually was selling drugs before he joined the movement. And Prabhupada said to him jokingly, he said, "Yes, I also sold drugs." But Prabhupada was a pharmacist. He wasn't a druggie. Anyway, so the point is, let's say you're a pharmacist, but you were actually selling people so many different drugs at different times that it'll help people in sense gratification. I'm sure you have to sell Viagra. I'm sure you have to sell other things like that. So it's hard for me to see if there's any occupation where you're not somehow or other participating in sinful activities. You can't avoid it. Whether you're driving a taxi, you're working for IBM, you're working for Facebook, you're working for, you know, unless you're just like, I mean, it's hard for me to think, unless you're just working for Krishna or something. You know, there's always going to be some connection. And so the one has to be practical and try to minimize it. Obviously, a devotee should not work for the slaughterhouse. That's a no-no. For example, in Fiji, we have devotees who grow kava for a living. And so, you know, people ask, you know, what about the devotees who grow kava? Well, kava also can be used as a medicine. In America, it's very popular. A lot of people buy kava not to get intoxicated, but as a sleep aid. So, but the vast majority are doing it. Or in the beginning days of the movement, the devotees supported the temples by selling incense. Now, you may say incense is pretty innocent, but, you know, you just offer to Krishna. But people were buying the incense to cover the smoke of their marijuana smoking. That's why was this gone so popular in selling incense? Because there were so many people smoking marijuana. They loved the smell of incense when they were doing so. So you had the point I'm making, you, whatever you do, you have some complicity or connection with these activities. And if you try to find some pure activity, you're going to be out of a job pretty quickly. You know, just like I have a lot of friends who run hotels. You know, here in America, every hotel is run by someone named Patel. And so we actually have like a saying, hotel, motel, Patels. So it's good for Krishna consciousness, because wherever I travel in the United States, I can just knock on the door and say, "Can I speak to Mr. Patel? Please give me a free room." But what are hotels used for? You know, people getting drunk, you know, whatever. I just find it hard to avoid that sort of. So if one works a job, you just have to give the results to Krishna and just like pray, be Krishna conscious. Because it's hard to figure out any job that there'll be no complicity. Isn't it? From my perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Maharaj.
So one has to be practical.
You know, thank you, Maharaj. That's a very good way to explain it. Thank you.
If you sell real estate, then people are buying houses to do God knows what. And, you know. Anyway, it's just... Okay. So on that happy note, I think Gopi has her hand up. She wants to ask a question. Is that right?
Yes, Guru.
Okay, what's the
can
question?
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
So I was curious, because as you were describing sannyas, you know, as accepting and rejecting, And obviously, I think we're all supposed to work towards that. But then it popped into my head. I was thinking, well, then, I mean, and it's probably just a basic question, but is there a difference between sannyas and guru? Like, are all sannyasis gurus or all gurus sannyasis? And it, which I'm assuming not. I mean, I know that, but I'm kind of curious about the difference between the two.
Okay. A sannyasi is a natural guru of the other classes. Now that sannyasi may not be an initiating guru, but at least instructing guru. Otherwise, he's not fulfilling his dharma as a sannyasi. Mm-hmm. So in other words, a sannyasi has to be yadyadacharati shresta stata evapro janaha. Set an example by his own behavior and also by his words. He has to be an acharya. Now, not all sannyasis will act as initiating gurus. Traditionally, in the Vedic system, it was grihasthas who gave initiation because that was more practical. Why is it more practical for grihasthas to give initiation? Because the grihasthas can actually stay in one place and train their disciples. But sannyasis would sometimes give initiation too. We have the six Goswamis of Vrindavan who gave initiation. They gave initiation to grihasthas, and in many cases, their disciples, that is, the disciples of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, grihasthas, would initiate others. So, anyway, someone can be a guru without being a sannyasi, but sannyasis should at least be siksha gurus. Okay. All right?
Yeah.
That's important. Otherwise, why is one a sannyasi unless he's a guide to humanity?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the reason. Okay, now Radha Padma's husband has a question.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev, Dandavat Pranam.
Yeah.
Gurudev, in ISKCON, like many brahmacharis, there is controversy sometimes. Some devotees criticize brahmacharis who are living in the temple. They really serve very nicely. But some devotees say, oh, they're taking stipend and things like that.
Stipend?
Yeah.
I know what stipend means. Brahmachari should live in the ashram of the spiritual master, not taking salary.
Gurudev, like even in India, like in Mayapur, they get some, it's not
maintenance is fine.
Obviously, you know, you want some $5 for your toothpaste. You can't tell the brahmacharis, make your own toothpaste, you know, find some tree and take the branches off and brush your teeth with it, you know, obviously. But if it's like in certain temples, it actually is salary that people get. Like someone will make, you know, $40,000-$50,000 a year for being a brahmachari. So that's not good. Brahmachari is brahmachari. I mean, obviously the temple should pay for his expenses, pay for his medical care, pay for, you know, his shoes, his socks, and everything like that. It's interesting, I saw one of the devotees here, not brahmacharis, one of the grihasthas who has holes in his socks, and I told him, I said, I'm gonna buy you a whole bunch of socks. You couldn't go around with holes in your socks. So, you know, there can be some stipend, I guess some money for just basic needs. But if it gets to be like a regular salary so they can buy a house or something like that, I have my doubts about it. Generally, my recommendation is that one is brahmachari for a certain time to get trained in Krishna consciousness, and then after that move to the appropriate ashram. Otherwise, it's just like it creates a social dysfunction. I mean, there's certain exceptional cases where one could be a brahmachari his whole life, a simple, humble soul. It's hard to be humble. I never learned to be humble. Anyway, so one could be a simple, humble soul his whole life. And serve in that way. But, you know, one wants to be puffed up. Then you take sannyas. Oh, sorry about that one. So one wants to be puffed up. Wow. what a Freudian slip. Anyway, what, I did that on purpose. But if one wants more accoutrements, then you move on to a different ashram. Like that. And practically speaking, if you have a temple, like some temples with like 1,000 brahmacharis, and those brahmacharis are 50 years old, you got problems, buddy. I mean, just practically do the mathematics. Not that they're all going to run after women. That's not the problem. The problem is they're getting old. And then what are you going to do when they're 60 or 70 years old? You know, who's going to care for them? You have an economic humongous problem on your hands. And people don't think like that. I mean, it's a humongous problem. It's like sometimes people go into the dairy business or raising cows, devotees. And they just think, oh, these nice cows, they're so beautiful. The cows get old. The cows reproduce. Of course, brahmacharis hopefully don't reproduce. If they did, they wouldn't be brahmacharis. Prabhupada said, better to be single, but if you're going to be a single daddy, then you better get married. So anyway, so the brahmacharis. So let's say you got a bunch of 1,000 70-year-old men. Oh my God. You got problems there. Or 70-year-old women, you know. You got big problems on your hands. And you got emotional problems. You got physical problems. You got medical problems. You have social problems. You know, 70. You don't know what it is to be like 70 years old. I know, because I don't have any emotional or physical problems or social problems. My disciples have all those problems. So anyway, they keep me busy with all their problems. So anyway, so the point is. Anyway, the point is we have to be thinking of society. We're trying to start a Krishna conscious society, and you got to think, what will happen to all these people in 20 years? You know, where's the money going to come to maintain? We've seen that happen in certain temples, not only with brahmacharis, but just with all the devotees getting older. You know, we don't want to be like the proverbial bees. What do the bees do when the worker bee can no longer work? Does anyone know? No one knows. They kick the worker bee out of the hive. That's why if you ever raise bees, you would see like all these dead bees on the outside of the hive. They've all been kicked out. That's their retirement plan. So we can't do that. We have to arrange for retirement plans for the devotees when they're 20 to 30 years old. That's responsibility. You know,
you just went muted somehow, Swami.
I'm not muting. Can everybody hear me?
No, now we can hear, but it was okay. Muted.
Okay. For how long was it muted?
Maybe a few seconds. Over a minute. Mm-hmm.
5 seconds. Okay.
Okay.
Now you can hear me. Krishna just shut me down for a second because I was saying something politically incorrect. So, we have to see. You know, of course, if someone is independently wealthy, has their own house, you know, that's fine. But, you know, we have to see what's best for the devotees long term. Anyway, that is my humble opinion. And certain of us, you know, will grow old and be happy. But if you got 1,000 people like me, old man, you got trouble. A thousand cranky old men, you're in big trouble, buddy. And actually, that's what happened in the Gaudiya Math, too. ISKCON has been approached many, many times because they have these older devotees who spent their whole life in the Gaudiya Math, and now they don't know what to do with it, but they want ISKCON to take care of them. So, I mean, we also have to understand, think practically. My whole point is you think when you're talking to someone, you think about 5 years in the future, 10 years in the future, 15 years in the future, 20 years in the future, 50 years in the future. And also, you have to be thinking about what happens when they die. And I'm not talking about keeping their money. I'm talking, hopefully everybody can still hear me. So I'm talking about, you know, the healthcare power of attorney, you know, where they get buried, you know, all these things like that have to be planned for. I mean, you say he who fails to plan, plans to fail. So that's really important. That was the point I was making. Anyway, very important. So people should be situated so where they can continue their whole life being happy. That's the point. Whether it's sannyasi, brahmachari, grahas, and steady in Krishna consciousness, chanting their rounds, reading Prabhupada's books, that's the important thing. Whatever is required. That means sannyas, that means brahmacharis, whatever it is. Everybody's different, but the leaders of the movement have to, at least, you know, the ministers, the priests, ministers, brahmins, whatever you may call them, have to really counsel people. That makes sense? You have to be concerned with people. People are not just tissues that you blow your nose in and then throw them away. Okay. Is that it? You one more question?
Thank you.
All right, let's let Gopal ask a question and that's it for the night after that.
So Krishna was saying in this chapter, and also you seem to be touching upon the same point, that certain things, even within this material life, should not be given up, such as planning for your future, planning for your retirement, planning for your death. So we can say that even these normal so-called mundane things are still the responsibility of every individual to make sure that he's not a burden to himself and his family.
Right, exactly. So what's the question?
Just clarifying.
Yeah, we have to plan. Not just a burden, but we have to arrange things so that we can contribute the most to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Whatever maximizes, just like if you have like a bell curve, whatever maximizes your production throughout this lifetime. Not just whatever maximizes it today. You know, if I wanted to maximize my service today, then I would take some stimulant. But that would minimize my long-term production. Anyway.
But so, along with maximizing one's service, isn't it also one's responsibility to minimize one's burden on others?
No, not necessarily. Maybe someone else's service to take care of. It depends on the situation. I mean, just like Prabhupada did minimize his burden on others, Prabhupada serving Prabhupada in the end, you know, wasn't a burden. It was a burden of love, actually. So,
of course, he also worked really hard. One could say to me,
minimize my burden, I'm going to jump off a cliff so no one will have to take care of me when I get old. So, you know, there's different standards of judgment. You know, you have to balance everything.
So everyone's an individual.
Everyone's an individual. Like, you know, so if you're a great devotee, then allowing people to do service for you, you know, even at the end is actually purifying for them. If you're a rascal, then it's putrefying. All right, so Sumukh, happy birthday. It's your Samuk took initiation on the 22nd September in Fiji in 2002. Wow. 18 years old.
Thank you, Gurudev. I have one small question, Gurudev. Very small. You know, there are signs when, like, I was in the deathbed with my mother, and I don't know that how she will leave the soul. What are the signs? The soul is about to leave the body. So it was good that Mahamantra Prabhu was next to me. He was saying that the leg, feet will be getting cold slowly, slowly, and she couldn't speak. The eyes will start talking. All those things I didn't know. Lucky it was Mahamantra Prabhu was there. I think this needs to be known to all devotees and all people in general as well. Now, these things are important. Otherwise, I wouldn't know that my mother. If Mahamantra was not there, I would just leave and I would go to temple and start worshipping. I wouldn't know that my mother will leave in 2 hours or 2 days like that. No. Yeah, so these things are supposed to be.
That's true. I mean, devotees need this information. That's true. Whew. A lot of information. Okay, so. And also we want to wish happy birthday to Chumbaka, who is 23 years old today. I think it's Mayapur Chandra's birthday too, so he's 16. Anyway, happy birthday to Chumbaka. And I first met Chumbaka when she was a little girl in her house in Detroit. And anyway, the family let me stay in Detroit with the rabbit. Anyway, it's another story. A story I'm not going to tell right now. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. We'll see everybody tomorrow evening. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Whoops, I thought I ended. Not yet.